everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode. In this episode, Trapper's joined by hunting guide Cade West, who talks about his adventures in Alaska before Trapper went up to Moose Camp. And they tell some stories about being in Moose Camp together and just their time hunting and guiding together. So we hope you enjoy.
Everybody, welcome to Traps Lodge. I've got a good friend of mine, Cade West, here, top guide and great friend, and we're going to kind of talk about our story of how he started working with us and his background and then his adventure this summer with up to Alaska and hunting with us, and then prior to that, he was working at a fishing camp. So everybody say hello to Cade. Cade, say hello.
Hey, everybody, what's going on? Cade West here, reporting in for podcast duty.
So, Cade, I guess we need to tell them the funny story of how
we met, huh?
Yeah, how we met. So, I guess we are through a mutual friend, Dylan, right? You were working construction, looking to do some, different type of life. So, I invited you up, came to the ranch, and yeah.
That was the day before Father's Day of 2019, and that was, we drove. We did a lot of driving that day, picked up an Eland bull.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about the ranch, and I said, man, let me think about it a day. So I came back the next day, and we're taking a tour of the working pens.
Yeah,
the deer pens, the facilities, and it's a pretty old school kind of deal. Anyway, in the bottom of that chute, you know, you're explaining to me that sometimes there's a rattlesnake or a family of coons or something.
Yeah, the squeeze chute, and I lifted up the door, and I forgot to, I let go of it, and it was kind of like hung up in a wedge.
Almost in a bind, yeah.
In a bind, and I forgot to, like, hook it, and I kind of pulled my head out of there, and you still had your head stuck in there.
I was still stargazing at the concrete.
And then the back of the door came down, hit you in the back of the head, and I felt it brush my shoulder, and I didn't really realize what happened, and I turned around, and you're spitting out teeth.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
So knocked your two front teeth out and bit through the bottom of your lip.
Through the bottom of my lip, into my chin, and
could not find a dentist that... Was it that day?
It was Father's Day Sunday.
Father's Day Sunday. So we had to go to a dentist on Monday. So
The rest of that day was, I was deemed toothless by Hunter Burkett.
Yeah, luckily Hunter had some potent ibuprofen or something that got you through.
Yeah, 800 milligram or something. And
yeah, and then that was for your job interview, and you still took the job.
I still took the job, which, I mean, shoot, I could be somewhere in construction right now, probably making a killing and... But this is the life for me. I've always wanted to be. I've worked on ranches in the past, and this one in particular was pretty intriguing. It came with a capture experience, which I had never been a part of, and I am very full into now. Not quite fluent, but I do know the language of it. So,
all right.
The hunting and the capture has always been a ton of fun.
So we rely on you a lot. Because your personality. So I pair certain guys with certain groups or people, so to speak. And you've got the great personality to be a guide. Very good at, you know, talking and holding conversations and asking questions and staying up late and all that kind of...
I can stay up late.
All that kind of stuff.
I can drink with the best of hunters or drinkers.
So as a guide, what's the hardest thing, or like, what's the hard lesson learned?
Man, don't ever hunt after one particular deer.
Yeah.
There's that one, which is always hard to get past, because a lot of the times your hunter sees that deer, or you see him for a split second, and then you spend the rest of your trip, you know, trying to pursue that deer, which you need to just be open-minded, and if you didn't get an opportunity, then maybe we'll get another one, and if not, then you need to start looking for something else.
Yeah, I've always said hunt as an opportunist. You know, if his opportunity presents itself, it's take it or leave it. And if you left it, then don't dwell on it. Just move on to the next.
Yeah.
You know, keep shopping, keep looking for something better. I like doing game cameras and getting pictures through the spot and scope, but I hate when guys are like, I want that deer, and I don't like saving, like, a particular deer for somebody, because you get you have to tell your other customers, you know, like, oh, he's off limits or he's already spoken for, and then a deer breaks half his rack or he kills it, you know, gets in a fight and dies.
Yeah, or gets locked up, and
which we had happen this year, or something stupid. So that's a hard thing to for people to understand why you don't want to just say particular deer for people. I just say let's come hunting and have a good time.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and make it enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
So you've been guiding with us going on 3 years or 4 years, all 3 years. This is your third season.
This will be my third season.
Full season. And then this summer you had the opportunity to go to Alaska. And we had some friends that came down here and hunted with you and I, my friends from Alaska, and you met Heath.
Yes.
And then his dad and him bought a fishing lodge on Kodiak Islands. Tell us about that. So we were willing to let you go and get the experience, and I thought it would be a good opportunity for you. So tell me how you think that turned out.
I mean, getting the opportunity to get paid to travel, especially to a destination place like Alaska. I know there's a bunch of people out there that save their entire life to go and do a trip where they can do all the, you know, big fishing or salmon fishing and bear watching and seeing the orcas, and just the countryside is, it's insane how beautiful it is up there. I had a great time. I was thankful enough to bring my lovely girlfriend along with me, and she was working in the lodge, and I was a deckhand on the charter fishing boat. We were on a 34-foot catamaran, dual 300 outboards. We would run every day, catch fish, limit out, haul back to the lodge, and then butcher fish all day. Once that was done, do some more work.
But when you first got there, you had to kind of remodel, rebuild the lodge.
Oh, it was like it was a whole month of just remodeling, as far as taking the old floor up, all the floors. We had to reduce a lot of the main floor joists, put new flooring in upstairs, downstairs, in the crew cabin, new drywall in the kitchen, new flooring in the kitchen, new bathroom. I mean, all kinds of stuff. New septic.
Well, that that construction experience sure pays off. It
helped a lot.
Yeah, makes you well-rounded. Makes you well-rounded, you know.
It helped out.
To be handy at a lot of things.
To be handy at a lot of things, and the boss would just point in. Of course, when I first got there, they're trying to gauge to see what all I know, to see what kind of jobs they can stick me on, whether it be electrical or carpentry or welding. We didn't have a welder up there, but, you know, if it needed to get done, they can trust me to go up there and do it. I had some experience in it, so.
Well, what all type of fish were y'all catching? So y'all were in Larsen Bay, right?
Larsen Bay, Kodiak Island, Alaska.
What's the name of the lodge?
Kodiak Island Resort.
And so y'all caught halibut, salmon, and what other kind of other fish?
Yeah, I mean, your main fish, your halibut, your ling cod, yellow-eye rockfish, Pacific cod or gray cod, king salmon, silver salmon. You can snag reds. That was always a ton of fun. And then usually once a week, you'd probably see orcas.
Right.
And that was a big attraction. A lot of people come up to Alaska just to see whales. So the fact that they can come on a fishing trip and get the opportunity to see orcas or humpbacks or...
And y'all saw quite a few bears too, right? A
ton of bears. We're not far from the Katmai National Park and Geographic Harbor, where a bunch of people, they fly in and stay on boats for weeks at a time in Geographic just to have the opportunity to get close. A lot of those big bear photos that you see that are 10 yards away that are taken over there, either at Brooks Falls or Geographic Harbor, which is so beautiful. Untouched. I would always, every time, we went over there probably 6 or 7 times this past fishing season, and every time, it makes you think about how many eyes have seen what you're seeing, and it's probably not that many, which is wild.
And then from there, so you were there how many months working in the fishing camp?
We got there June 4th. We left Austin at 8 a.m. and got to the lodge at about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 3 hours behind. It was all day traveling. Thankfully, it was a beautiful day. It was good weather in Kodiak, which is a rarity.
Yeah, because y'all fought. You were telling me y'all or lucky a lot of times you had good weather, but that weather on that down there can get foggy and rainy.
It was weird. And Larsen Bay, you're kind of protected by the mainland and a bunch of mountains, but as soon as that weather comes around the other side of the island, Kodiak is just always either fogged in or rained in. There's never any sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 40 days out of the year they get sun, I would bet.
But y'all got lucky, you got quite a bit of sun.
We got lucky, and it was a beautiful day.
Your pictures and videos were pretty
immaculate.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then, so June 4th, we got there. I was the first one to leave in late August. I believe I got out of there August 25th or 26th. Spent a day in Anchorage. Spent the night there, then the whole next day in Anchorage.
Got you some new rain gear.
Got some new rain gear. It worked pretty decent.
Yeah.
But was thankful to buy some new gear, see restaurants for once, and stores, because Larsen Bay, there is none.
Yeah.
And then I hopped on a plane to Nome to meet Jimmy Feegis for the moose camp.
Yeah.
Moose camp and caribou, or moose and reindeer.
Right.
And then you came up.
I guess you were there a couple of days.
I got up there the 27th or 28th.
Yeah.
And we had to get the trailer unloaded and the six-wheelers down to Teller and across the bay to Brevik.
That's when we brought y'all Josh, and y'all rode out there to get to moose camp.
That was the day you and Josh and Eric flew out. That was, what, the 30th or the 29th or something?
Yeah, and we brought y'all Josh, and then that was like a...
that was a roller coaster in itself.
Roller coaster in itself, because Jimmy was like, oh, yeah, it's only like 4 hours, and Josh like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. And then he was like, after he got off the phone, he was like, I don't know if this is something I really want to do. I'm like, well, you're younger than everybody, and you really want an adventure. And he had a hell of an adventure, because it took y'all like 12 hours through the fog and the rain and rolling six-wheelers over and trailer popping off.
Oh, goodness. What a headache. It was like on Jimmy's inReach, we finally got a final mile count.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be about a 32 or 35 mile on six-wheelers on the correct route.
Right.
If he didn't veer off. And we ended up doing 47 that day. And we did flip two-wheelers. The trailers kept popping off. Gear was everywhere. I lost my sleeping bag that night. I don't know where it went. And which is somewhat scary, because you don't know what the weather's going to be. What did the inReach? It would say, slight chance of heavy rain. And the next day would be a heavy chance of slight rain. So you're kind of guessing on what the heck the weather's going to do.
My inReach would have one little drop, or two little drops, or three little drops. And that's all I had for my weather.
That kind of rain would differ. It would either be a very minimal mist for 4 hours, or it'd just be wet,
but
cold.
Josh, even with his rain gear, because you know, when you're riding, that rain's going up down your sleeves, and it was going like in his hood.
Poor
and then like
Josh.
Down the back of his neck.
We've probably been 2 miles, and he's like, I'm soaked.
Oh. But then, all's well. So y'all got there late that night.
Ended up getting there late. It was dark. I mean,
yeah.
And of course, I have never been to Alaska. I'm not a very experienced four-wheeler at all.
Right.
So when you're going over no roads, just tundra.
Right.
And you're following Jimmy, who has been...
Who's like X Games
champion.
Yeah,
X Games. Been all over the world flipping snowmobiles and six-wheelers and side-by-sides, all kinds of crap. So he's like cruising through the riverbeds and over the tundra, like hauling butt. And Josh's poor little six-wheeler is so old and decrepit. He's like bouncing around. He's cold, wet, soaked to the bone.
Jimmy got the brand new one.
I was on the Can-Am.
Oh, you got the Can-Am.
I was on the Cadillac.
There you go.
I was bringing up the caboose, making sure nobody broke down. I had a real smooth ride. That was a sweet machine.
Yeah, those Polaris, they don't even make those anymore.
No.
I don't even know what
they make. Shout out to Can-Am if you guys want to sponsor or something. We can use some new side-by-sides and
six-wheelers. And then Moose Camp was fun.
Moose Camp was awesome. I got to meet some really great guys. It was really fun having you there, because we had a bunch of hunters that we knew. You know,
right.
Our taxidermist, Eric, and
brother-in-law
Josh.
It was fun having Eric there, even though he was in a lot of pain.
I felt bad for Eric. That was a tough deal.
And then it was a big help, you coming to help us get that moose out, because we were
That we were wore out by the time you got there.
I could tell. I could read the tundra.
We were hungry and wore out. And it was, I mean, a moose is a lot of work. People don't understand. I say that all the time. Like, hunting them's not that hard. I mean, it can be hard, but killing a moose is not the, like, most difficult task in the world. But once you get one on the ground and then trying to piece and part him out and get him in game bags, because lifting up a hindquarter, you can't hardly do by yourself.
No.
And you have to bring out all edible meat, so
it's... With the bone, mm-hmm. out of the field.
Mm-hmm.
So you're... What's a bull moose?
I think they can weigh up to 1,800 pounds.
I believe that.
That bull was every bit of 1,600 pounds.
Yeah. So we probably took out 1,000 pounds.
Close to it. Meat and bone. Yeah. You figure a third of an animal's their guts, the other third's...
Bones.
Their bones, and then... Maybe a third of its meat. But then you got the head and the antlers, too, which is another... That's
and the cape.
Hit. And the cape, which is about 90 pounds.
The cape itself is 90
pounds. Yeah, so a third is, like, hide and bones, and a third is, like, meat. So, yes, 600 pounds of raw meat. So, it's a lot. And then you got your caribou, you and me and Josh. That was an adventure in itself.
And Josh was already on this podcast before I was. So, y'all heard his listeners story. Kind of already got a bit of the story, but... It was...
We actually never finished Josh's story. Like, Josh didn't finish the details of it, and I didn't hit on it, but everybody's moose was killed out, and then you and Josh were, the last ones left with that group that needed to kill out before. And Josh was, like, running out of days.
Yeah.
Because he dealt with the moose, and he helped with everything else, and he just kind of...
And we had other clients on
rainy days, and then finally we got all three six-wheelers and just loaded our spike camp up. And everything we thought we needed and headed out.
You said the next 3 days, we are not coming back here. We're leaving an airplane with two caribou.
Right.
Two reindeer, rainbow, whatever you want to call them.
And then, man, we flipped the trailer. We had some breaking down issues. And then we flipped the trailer and it crushed all of our food. Got mixed up. There's
goldfish stuck to mustard goldfish, packets.
Yeah, stuck to everything.
Batteries and... Wow.
But then we camped that night. And then the next morning, I just had this feeling to myself... Because we hadn't really seen anything. We met up with Jimmy, got his six-wheeler. He flew out with his client that had killed a couple of reindeer. And they killed a bear that ran into camp that evening, him and Zane.
That was after.
Was that before Zach and them came?
That was when we were flying Mike and them out. I think Mike was in camp. Zach and Wes were still in Tyler. This was the next morning after that spike camp.
That was when we were getting Wes and everybody, when we headed out with them and met with Jamie, was when they got the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to Josh and you. When we got up that morning from camp, I just had this gut feeling like I was like, they're here somewhere. Be here. Come on, caribou, be here. Where are you? And yeah, I know you're around somewhere. I remember when Josh ran up the hill to get that deadhead or shed or whatever, and I was just... took my glasses out, because every time we stop, you got a glass, because that country's so big.
It's so big.
And you can see forever, and then there's all those nooks and crannies that you can't see, so you go a little further, and you can see more country that you couldn't see. So I'm just looking, and I just see these big white beards, like five of them, go behind this hill, and I was like, and I saw some big antlers, and I was like, bingo, baby, like, game on. And we drove across that valley, got up there, got set up. And then we couldn't find them because they were kind of on the base of the hill. But we had thought maybe because they can walk pretty fast. So we thought.
Yeah, walking speed's like 8 miles an hour.
Right. So we thought they'd pass us up. So Zane went and checked to make sure they didn't pass us up, came back. And then we kind of split up.
We still hadn't seen them. It'd been like 30 minutes.
Yeah. So then you and Zane went on one side of the hill. Me and Josh went the other way to see which side of the hill they were going to go around. And Josh, as soon as we split up, Josh saw them.
Yeah.
And y'all got to back over to us.
They were kind of side-hailing into a, what do you call it?
Valley.
Cut in the side of this big mountain hill.
And we thought they were going to keep walking, but luckily they checked up to bed down. But as soon as they went out of sight,
we were track stars.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen you move that fast, I don't think ever.
Ever?
No.
Yeah, so I just knew, because we had ranged it like 800 or 900. I think
right there was 12.
It was a lot.
And then to the bottom of that... Coming off of our hill was about another 400 yards.
I just knew that
and
we had to cut
up that hill. Yeah. Was another 400.
We had to cut that distance
we
way
cut
down.
Cut it in a two thirds off. Right. I think it was. I think we cut about 1,200.
Yeah, we cut about 800 yards off.
Yeah,
and then Josh, I was still catching my breath a little bit and slowing down because we didn't still know really exactly where they were. We kind of lost them again. And then Josh just, he was like 10 feet in front of us and peeked his head up and boom, found them.
Thankfully, right, they were bedding down. Mm-hmm. So it gave us, I mean, we were pretty well hidden, so it gave us time to catch our breath because I was winded. I didn't do any kind of training or nothing special before I went. And I'm thinking I've got a packed moose, you know,
mm-hmm.
2 miles at least.
Luckily, the six-wheelers helped.
Thank God we had six-wheelers because I wouldn't have come back, I don't think. I needed to do some kind of training. Yeah. but I didn't, and I survived.
More cardio.
Thankfully.
So then we got Josh on his bull. His bull went down, and then Kate had the other rifle and knocked your big bull down. And then that was a good day.
That was an awesome day.
It was an awesome day. Thank God. Then it kind of started raining. Like, it would rain, like, sprinkle, and then it'd go away. Then sprinkle, go away.
It would kind of hit or miss every 20, 30 minutes.
And it felt like about the time it got dark, then that storm hit.
Well, thankfully, we had already gotten both booze off the side of that mountain to the wheelers.
Camp set up.
We found a good spot to set camp next to a good spot to land the plane so we can get fuel and put the meat in the plane and ship it back to Teller. But the next day, different.
Like 30 hours of...
30 hours of just total crap weather.
Rain, so wind. Shitty.
Rain, wind, all day.
All day.
Fog.
I remember as soon as it finally quit, everybody bust out of that tent and ran four different directions.
I've got to pee over here. I got to poop over there.
Gotta go there.
I have to move more than... I got to not look at the three people I've been staring at.
Four guys in a bombshell for 30 hours. It stunk like... a locker room.
And all four of those guys hadn't showered in 10 days. Yeah.
So when you got back to Texas after being gone 3 or 4 months, you were good to be home, huh?
Heat. It was a hot day when I got home.
Mm.
I hadn't felt heat in a long time. I think the hottest day I had up there was about 74, 76.
That's a lot to adapt to.
And that's a pretty warm day. People were out in the cold, cold water skiing and a bunch of crazy people up there.
So you said that reindeer meat's pretty excellent, huh?
It's awesome. Holy cow.
You cooked some the other night?
I cooked steaks, not last night, night before last. And, I want to get, I was going to ask Joe Rogan last night, went to a comedy deal in Austin, but I was going to ask him, hey, let's have a grill off, your elk versus my caribou.
Hmm.
And I didn't get the opportunity.
No.
That's all good.
He'd probably just say, nah.
He would have been like, nah, I'd beat you. And I'd be like, well, no, but
you'll never know.
I'll never know, I guess.
No, you should say to Joe Rogan, like, you'll never know how good a cook I am with my reindeer.
Yeah. He'll never know.
He'll never know.
Unless I guess he'd have to comply and have a grill off, but
what's the bet? What are we going to put up?
Just bragging rights.
Bragging rights.
That'd be $100 or $1 or something.
Pretty good bragging rights. And then you helped us finish out our access season when you got home and exotics this summer. And then you got to go fishing over. You took some meat back to those guys in Alabama.
Oh, yeah, to Wes and them. That was right before we shipped off to Alaska. I had already had plans to do Alaska, but I had some hunters coming in from Alabama.
Oh, before you went to Alaska.
Yeah, it was a good buddy of mine, Wes Moore, Alligator Alley. I'm actually wearing his T-shirt today. He's got a sweet alligator farm down there around Fairhope, Alabama, not far from Mobile. And he's been hunting with me for about 2 years now. Super good guy. He brought his wife and his buddy down, and they killed awesome, probably number two axis by a woman this year. With a rifle. It's probably 165-inch, 160-class axis. Huge, huge buck. Killed a pair of addicts, a Gims buck. I think a pretty good fallow. Anyway, had all the meat. We took a road trip down there. Did some fishing with Wes down in the Gulf. All limited short. Limited out on snapper, red snapper both days. Grouper. I don't remember what kind of grouper. But it was so fantastic. That's probably number two tastiest fish behind a halibut.
Hmm.
It's right there with it.
A grouper?
Grouper, super good. Super fun to catch.
I don't know if I've ever had it. I've seen them, like, YouTube videos of people catching them. They can get big, like the
Goliaths. The Goliaths are huge. In fact, Captain Jim down in Naples, All In, shout out, Captain Jim, Kodiak Island Resort and All In down in Naples, Florida. He does big, big Goliath grouper fishing. Ton of snapper. Ton of smaller, you know, the edible grouper. Super good dude. Pretty down there in Florida this time of year.
So you think you want to go back to Alaska?
That's up to the girlfriend.
But you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. It's an outdoorsman paradise. We're right. Fishing every day. If I had the opportunity to hunt and go back and do moose camp, I think I would do it again. If I had the opportunity to harvest another animal or even a moose, I mean, just to be there, be part of it, see that country is.
How important is gear up there?
It is the utmost importance to have waterproof, warm gear. But if you're hunting, you do need to layer correctly. You can't just pack on, like my rain gear that I bought was Stone Glacier. It was just a single layer.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it because, one, it was cheaper than the triple layer, but the triple layer
is what
Ozuna had.
Uh-huh.
And you can't walk around too much in that because you're just going to be so sweat wet.
More of like sitting still.
Yeah. You'd want that if you're sitting, glassing a certain valley that you know, like mule deer have been coming to, or one particular mm-hmm. elk bull. But with those moose, I mean, they're pretty much stationary in the same valley with the same set of cows.
Right.
They might move a mile or two this way, that way, if I'm right.
Right, yeah.
And so when you're walking from camp, like if you don't have a six-wheeler and you have to walk 5 miles,
mm-hmm.
It's hard to...
You want
to
layer properly, because then you sit down and start glassing, you get cold.
Yeah, so you got to have good waterproof gear. You have to have warm gear because it does get stupid. I mean, we were there in middle of September, which isn't nearly as cold as it is right now. What is it? It's December 8th today?
Yeah, it's...
I can't...
Full on winter now.
It's negative down up there right now. Mm-hmm. Guarantee it. Very minimal sunlight up there right now, which is another weird thing.
Oh, I had like daylight. Like,
yeah, the longest day of the year was June 20th or 21st.
It's hard to sleep, huh?
June 4th, 2021, I did not get any sleep. we had been there. It's all day traveling, all day in the air, in airports, and I'm tired, and I go to sleep, and it's just like someone has a spotlight, QB'ing. Right in the window, right on my face, all night long.
You have to hang some curtains.
Yeah, and once we moved into the crew cabin, we hung up some blankets and stuff, and they stayed up most of the time.
So, in Texas, what's your favorite thing to guide? Do you have a particular favorite thing?
Man. I mean, whitetail's always fun, especially on a low fence. When you get into the high fence whitetail, you get a lot of those guys that are, I want a real ugly looking deer. Or the nice thing about high fence is you can grow big deer.
Well, you can have more control.
You can have a lot more control over it, which is nice. But
I think Axis
has got to be that or like Neil Guy.
Yeah, those are probably the most challenging.
Axis is a challenging hunt. It's, people think it's so easy. Like, oh, like, you have access. Like, yeah, I don't know where they're at. Mm-hmm. And if we see them, we only see them for 2 seconds.
Well, then we finally got that buck that somebody had missed.
Wes had missed it.
Missed it beginning
on that trip
in the spring, right?
Yeah.
And then we didn't see that deer. We saw him. We thought he was wounded. Then Dylan and I saw him for like 5 minutes. And nobody saw him for the next 3 months.
I was in Alaska, but we had hunts out there.
Yeah, we'd hunted Axis out there all summer, and then
still never saw that deer.
Still never saw him, and then we saw him. I found him again. It started because now he was probably just getting ready to shit out. He started coming to feed, and had a client miss him, shoot over his back. So that deer got missed twice, and then 2 weeks later, Ty finally got that deer killed with a client, he thought that they had wounded him, but they ended up making a good shot. But that was a 34-inch bladed deer that was a trophy of a lifetime for an Axis.
In velvet.
No, he was in velvet when
he was in velvet when we first missed him, and he had to have been like 2.5-3 inches wide.
Yeah, because hard antler, he was like 2.5.
It was
two
so stupid. That deer
blades.
Was so cool.
So like that type of Axis to me is my favorite.
Oh yeah,
like hands down. Of exotics, like that deer right there.
I think it's my favorite thing to guide. And if I were to hunt anything, you know how in Texas you get a bunch of those guys that are I've got 20 whitetail hanging on the wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just not that big of a fan. I mean, I get all horned up about a big, pretty typical 10 point, you right. know, or a heavy 8 point. It's going to go 150 plus. But for the meat, the way the mount looks, that I mean, there's only most axes are 6 points, but there's so many different variations.
They all look different.
Every single one looks different.
Everybody thinks they look the same. They're not.
Oh, no. Because you can get the real big bladed 30 inch, whatever, or big caudal tines that are 14 inches long, and he's, you know, not super big in the beams, or you can get 36 inch and an all around badass deer. But
variety, yeah.
I think if I were to go hunt something in excess, it'd be Axis, and if I were to guide anything, it'd be Axis or Nilgai.
Nilgai's tough.
Nilgai's another tough one. You got to be good at what you do to kill those two things.
And then you like predator hunting too, right?
I enjoy it. I mean, I'm not like a fanatic that I'm gonna go and
do it every
join
night.
The contests right. and do it every weekend. And
no, just I'm just I guess it just came to my mind because we were talking about like what do you do January, February when hunting basically whitetail season's over and things start slowing down. It's like, well, we start shed hunting and we start predator hunting because you got spring coming up with a lot of your fawns being mm-hmm. born. So we try to run snares and predator hunt a little bit. So that's kind of what we do that time of year.
We need to do some calling next door and mm-hmm. try to kill some hogs this winter, you know, those months where we're kind of on a dead spell.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun.
And it's easier now because the days are shorter, so you don't have to wait till like 10 o'clock in the summer when it gets dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that way you're not up till like 3 in the morning.
Chasing stuff.
I'm too old for that. I like sleep.
I like sleep too. I'm not nearly as old as you are.
I'm kind of a night owl, but after about 11, I'm not a night owl anymore.
After about 10 o'clock and 3 whiskey drinks, I'm pretty well set for bed. Or my chair, wherever I end up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, cool. Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap it up. Anything else you want to hit on, Cade?
Man, it's been real and it's been fun. I loved Alaska. I love it still. It'll always have a special spot in my heart, along with Texas. Born and raised here in Texas.
We got to get you up to Wyoming, though, too.
I need to put in for my pronghorn mule deer.
Yeah, yeah. You'll enjoy that.
I can't wait like for it that. It'll be awesome.
Because you haven't done that much out-of-state stuff.
No, Alaska was my first out-of-state deal.
Right.
I'm somewhat of a novice when it comes to hunting not in a blind.
Right.
Grew up, you know, hunting in Hondo, Texas in a box on 2 feeders, you know.
It's just different style.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, you can't, when you're down there, it's not like you're going to walk in stalks. It's flat and brushy and you make more noise.
Yeah.
You can't be quiet.
Mm-mm.
Everything's poking you or prodding you. And
but when you're in Alaska and the wind's howling 50 miles an hour in your face,
right,
you can get up on. Pretty fun. Same thing with Wyoming, I'm sure.
Well, guys, I've really enjoyed Cade working with us and guiding for us. And if you want to book a hunt with us, Republic Outdoors, Cade would definitely be one of the top guides we have. And he's very entertaining, a very great guy. I'm happy to have him on our crew. And I'm glad he got the opportunity to go to Alaska and hopefully many more opportunities together. So
I'm glad I got the opportunity to be on this podcast. This has been awesome.
Well, you're a great personality to be on a podcast.
Heck yeah.
I struggle with it.
I thought I was kind of somewhat nervous walking into this thing, but
dude, you never get nervous. Come on.
I get nervous, believe me that.
All right.
But it's easy to talk to you, Trap. Shoot.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you guys. Have a good day.
Sign off.